And it is a good morning, 7:10 a.m. How are you doing, sir?
I'm dry right now, so I'm doing okay.
Hey, no, it's better than most.
But yeah, before we get into the show, I do want to address what's happened up in Valencia. It's a terrible tragedy, and I think we're feeling some of the effects right now. We're actually under a weather advisory. Yesterday, Jerez was under a red advisory, and you can find some videos of flooding that took place up there. I don't think we've been hit anywhere near as hard as communities around Valencia, but an absolutely terrible tragedy out there. And the government of Spain has actually declared today, tomorrow, and Saturday 3 days of mourning. So wherever you happen to be, whatever you happen to be doing, please, you know, spare a moment to keep those folks in your thoughts. And if you have friends or loved ones up there, I highly recommend that you just reach out to them, make sure they're doing okay, and see if there's some way that we can help them as they begin to recover. We obviously have some weather here that we're dealing with. So as you're driving around, please be careful. If you don't have to get on the roads, I recommend you don't get on the roads for a little bit. Let the system pass. Let the area dry out and just do your best to be safe. So don't mean to start it off on such a somber note, but that is something that I think will be on everybody's mind as we start the day today. And they really start to dig out from all that terrible damage up in Valencia.
Yeah, safety is a very big priority. So especially for the Halloween day, I know we're going to be getting a little bit more into that here in a second.
Yeah.
Just be safe, you know, be aware.
In general, whether it's the weather or it is just the fact that you're out after dark, please be safe. If you got kids wandering around with you, have them in brightly colored things, have some reflective stuff on you. As your kids go to school, make sure that they have their lights on. If they're riding bikes, make sure they got their helmets on, make sure they're wearing something reflective. If you're driving around the school, especially in weather like this, where things happen a little bit slower, it's harder to see stuff, you don't brake quite as fast, just take your time. Be slow, be safe, make sure everybody gets to where they're going safely so that we can all get about our day and enjoy the holiday.
Easy part.
Yeah.
So now let's switch it up a little bit.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking a little bit more about the trunk or treat that was happening.
That was fantastic. That was such
a
great event.
You were there, sir, right?
We were there. I was dressed up basically as the middle-aged dad patiently watching his kids grab candy. So... you know, normal day clothes. But I thought it was an amazing event this year. There were, I think, 1,100 kids who signed up to go through and get candy. We had more cars than we've ever had. We gave out more candy than we ever had. We had more kids than we've ever had at these things. It was just a fantastic event. I think some of those trunks were astonishing, and I still try not to think about the little haunted baby one when I'm falling asleep, because that one was absolutely terrifying. But it was so much fun watching the kids go through there and grab candy, and all the different costumes and the American community just coming together for a little while was a whole bunch of fun.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of work on that Saturday, but I know some friends of mine from the Second Class Petty Officer Association put together a nice little cool sand lot, trunk.
That was a good one.
So I want to give a little shout out to them and all their hard work. What about you, sir? We haven't really gotten to introduce you. We have Captain Mamaconi in here. Were you able to go out to Trunk or Treat?
I was at Trunk or Treat with my family as well, being the middle-aged dad in tow with his kids getting candy. But awesome event, and really glad the weather held up for that.
It's good to see that we have some matching costumes here today.
Yeah, I think a lot of people dressed up like us. It was a little embarrassing, frankly.
Hey, you know, it's a good costume. It's a good costume. You got to be comfortable, right? That's the entire point, is enjoy the day off.
Yes.
So I know we also are looking at the new arrival of Oscar Austin, too. I know we have a few words that we wanted to touch on upon that, but I think we want to get to know you just a little bit more. So we have like a few questions I'm pretty sure the CEO is going to want to get into to kind of introduce you.
Yeah. So for those listening, I have with the pleasure to speak with Commodore Alex Mamaconian, who is CTF 65 and Desron 60. But Alex, if you would, introduce yourself to the crowd out there. Where are you from? How did you end up here?
Hey, good morning, Skipper. Thanks for having me here. So I grew up outside of Chicago in the west suburbs, not necessarily a Navy town, although we are about an hour south of Great Lakes Naval Base, the in-processing and boot camp for all sailors here in the Navy. Had a father. My dad was in the Navy Reserves for over 20 years, and so that had a bit of influence in seeing kind of, you know, what he would do on weekends and some off times during the summer. And really just having an interest to serve, to kind of go see the world, do something, you know, different when I grow up. And I joke now that, you know, I've been in the Navy 24 years, and at some point I'll end this and go get a real job and start a career of some sort. But it's been terrific. I've really enjoyed it. But grew up in the Midwest, went to Purdue University, did the ROTC program there, where you are like a college student and then are doing a drill once a week in summer training, and that's a path to a commission. And I've been a surface warfare officer the past 24 years driving ships, and been on staffs to support ships, one tour in the Pentagon, but predominantly been in the West Coast in San Diego, Pearl Harbor, had a command of a destroyer, the Wayne Meyer, in Hawaii about 5 years ago. And you blink and it goes by very quickly. Here I am 24 years later.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I do love that there are different commissioning sources, different ways to get to where we are here. You can go to the academy, you can go through OCS, you can go through ROTC, as you have. There are so many different careers that you can have as an officer in the Navy. So for those who are out there thinking about the officer route, lots of ways to earn a commission, lots of very interesting and fulfilling jobs that you can do with a commission. So, you know, make sure you talk to all of us and figure out how we got to where we are and steal from us, take our ideas and run with it, make the Navy a little bit better.
That's a free resource as well. Yeah. You're available.
Yeah. Please. Yeah. Please come talk to us about it. So, I don't want to get too far ahead of us here, but, you are here as the Commodore for Desron 60. Can you broadly explain what that means?
Sure. And the title can sometimes be confusing of what's a Desron and a CTF. So a Desron is simply just a destroyer squadron. I'm the kind of captain of the five captains of ships that are here as their ISIC or immediate superior in command. And with two hats, I have the destroyer squadron 60 hat, 60 being we're in Sixth Fleet. And my job there is to maintain and uphold the manning, training, and equipping of those warships, the sailors that are in them, and all the support that goes into getting them ready to do their deployments. The CTF 65 side, that's Commander Task Force 65, falls under the operational chain of command under the numbered fleet commander. In this case, it's U.S. 6th Fleet. And when ships are at sea and operating, they fall under an operational command structure all the way to the numbered fleet commander and then Naval Forces Europe, falling under the combatant command of U.S. European Command. So really the two sides of it are, if you think about it, the Desron job would be all the getting ready to operate, and then the CTF job is literally when the ships are out at sea operating, and those operations cover the gamut of everything from just presence ops in the Mediterranean to the high north to potentially if we have to do a non-combatant evacuation of a country in the Levant, and then primarily the ballistic missile defense of Europe and Israel is why these ships are here.
That's seems like a couple of pretty heavy hats that you wear. And I get a little bit wonky. I won't too much right now talking about the differences between those two jobs and the tension that it creates inside your own office. But, you know, for those who are listening, it's a fascinating balance between those two jobs that you have to do. And I do have to say, my lovely bride did remind me that I forgot to mention as a commissioning source, ODS as well. So for those who come into some of the non-line officer jobs going through officer development school, that is a way to get yourself into the fleet as an officer as well. So lots of ways to earn your commission and be a part of the Navy.
Is trying to keep you humble a little bit. You know, it's like, hey, by the way. Yeah. Little reminder.
Yeah, so it is. So she's been my pocket JAG for much of my career because she was a JAG when we first met, and her advice has been invaluable. You know, throughout my entire career, I know that every time I've had a question, I reached out to her because, as somebody who lived in the real world, which she reminds me I never did because I'm an academy grad, so I didn't have the chance to be a college student. I've always been in uniform for this. The perspective, that's one of the things I love, the perspective from all the different commissioning sources and what they bring to the fleet. It makes us, we've talked about diversity on other shows before, but it's such a diverse background, diverse ways of looking at the problems that we have. Sorry, I don't mean to hijack the conversation about Desron, but it does highlight what we do. So I'm an aviator coming in here, and the Navy's asked me to run the base where the focal point is the harbor, and it is the ships that we have in the harbor. But I think having those two diverse backgrounds and those two diverse perspectives better enable us to support the missions that you have, some of the stuff that happens on the flight line, the expeditionary forces that we have. I think it's just a great compliment. But I don't know, not to put you on the spot, but what do you think? Do you think it's interesting having those two different...
I think so, Tegan. As you get more senior, I mean, usually in the junior officer ranks, it's very parochial and tribal with your community. And I think as you get some time in the U.S. Navy and learning to work with everybody across all the designators and communities, you realize there's a bigger picture in all that. And I think it's very complementary. And as you get more senior, I think the designators that we have, you being like a naval aviator, me being a SWO, folks that we have here on base that are, you know, CBs and EOD, the mission set becomes a little broader. There's a bigger picture and focus to accomplish, and it's really complementary. I know certainly while the destroyers are a big point of the base and naval activity span, you certainly have an airfield that we critically utilize to get parts across the theater, and there are certainly the fastest way to get equipment, people, and parts. From like Rota out to the Mediterranean and the Eastern Med, especially with everything going on. So that's just clutch.
Yeah, I do love it. I love all the cool stuff that we have the chance to do here.
And I think we're going to go a little bit more into it. I know we touched upon Oscar Austin a little bit, but I think we need a little bit of a music break, catch our breath, sip some coffee just a little bit. And of course, the music is going to keep rolling here at the radio station. We've got some Blue Oyster Cult with Don't Fear the Reaper. And we are back with the CO Show. And of course, we are back with Captain Mamakonian as well. We're going to be touching a little bit more on the arrival of Oscar Austin. Do you have a little bit more information to put out with like the big event with everybody coming into their new port?
Absolutely. So Oscar Austin, DDG 79, home port shifted from Norfolk, Virginia, and arrived in Rota just over 2 weeks ago. And so she joins the fleet here as the fifth destroyer home ported in Rota. And I believe the genesis goes back all the way to, I think, 2015 with, having home ships home ported in Rota, Spain. It's a really strategic port, access into the Straits of Gibraltar and the Mediterranean. You can get almost anywhere from the North Sea up to Scandinavia to all the way to the Eastern Med within 5 days. And so the tyranny of distance of having ships just based off the East Coast and deploying to Europe gets shortened quite a bit with having ships that are home ported here in this great base here in Rota with our Spanish partners.
And do you have anything you want to add on to that, sir, with the new ship pulling into your installation?
Well, number one, welcome. We're really happy to have Oscar Austin, her crew, and her families here. I know it's been a lot of work for them and for the Desron to have them prepared and ready to come over here. There was also a lot of work with the installation and with a lot of the organizations that we have here in making sure that we're ready to welcome them, whether it was MWR, who is still in the middle of a campaign to welcome the crew and the families here, the USO, who's reached out to them as soon as they got here, or to Fleet and Family Support and the Exchange and the Commissary and Housing, who all did a lot of work to make sure that we are ready to welcome all these sailors here. So It seems like we're supporting her pretty well. For those Oscar Austin folks who are out there, if there's things we can do better, please let us know. We want you guys to walk down the brow and step into your home every time you guys have that chance. And I also think it was a great welcoming ceremony. So having Admiral Munch here, having the Chargé d'Affaires, having the Deputy Chief of Mission for the U.S. mission to NATO all here, I think it clearly demonstrates the importance to the U.S. in having Oscar Austin here. And then having Al Flott, the Admiral of the Fleet, here representing the Spanish, I think demonstrates how important it is to the Spanish to have us here, because that bilateral relationship that is usually most obviously evident in the way that we work alongside their ships or the way that the helicopters train with each other, it permeates everything here. And it is a relationship that emanates out into the towns and the communities around us. And I love having more Americans here because it's more chances to show the Spanish communities who we are, what our cultures are, what our values are. And it's more chances for the Spanish communities to share their culture with us and to really kind of strengthen those ties between us. I've said it in a couple of different venues. Our oldest allies are the Spanish. They've been partners with us since before we were a country. So the chance to continue to be a part of strengthening that oldest relationship that we have is, it's pretty humbling, and it's really, really cool. So I get very excited about it.
Yeah, I know the first day where the ship arrived, they did a flag, the Spanish flag raising ceremony on the yardarm on Oscar Austin and my counterpart, Commodore Grusso from Squadron 41, along with the ship's captain. Just very, very proud day. The ship is excited to be here. They're receiving great support. The feedback I've gotten, I was on board yesterday, and they definitely feel like this is becoming home for them, not just another stop on a port visit on a deployment. Good. So that's a great indication of it. And just thank you to the team here at Naval Activities Spain for the welcoming, the ceremony, and all the support you've given far in advance of their arrival.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, a lot of folks did a lot of hard work on that one. So I'm glad that the Oscar Austin folks are feeling like they're home.
Yeah, it's good that we have them here too. But looking forward, we also want to see like how this is going to implement to like our future planning with the CNO guidance and everything like that. How is like the Oscar Austin being here helping us be ready for the fight?
Sure. I think in numbers, as you get more ships that are in a location, it just kind of increases, you know, CNO uses more players on the field. You could use the analogy depth on the bench. You just have ships that go and are go through different readiness periods. And if you've got five and in 2026, soon to be six destroyers, you've got, you know, you can get on a more predictable rotation of ships that'll go and deploy for a set amount of time, come back and expect to do training and maintenance and kind of have some reset. So obviously, although the fifth destroyer doesn't move the needle far to the right of what you can do, it does allow for some, you know, operational flexibility, additional operations activities and investments that ships can do throughout the AOR here in Europe, and really just having more options. So her presence here, not just from a, you know, warfighting and presence standpoint, also just allows, you know, the leadership in the theater, you know, opportunities to engage more with allies and partners.
Yeah, the relationship is always the key focus here, especially with our European allies. And just looking at having more ships here probably makes it easier for like our shore to sea time, making it a little bit easier instead of like being out in the water for much longer, being away from family and friends. Like we could just start rotating them more out and getting everybody that circle of training.
Absolutely. And I think a big reason, getting back to, you know, joining the Navy, a lot of us wanted to see and experience, you know, things across, you know, the world. And, you know, the ships here have the added benefit of, you know, healthy manning levels, being that, you know, we're kind of at, you know, the tip of the spear and forward deployed. Ships are typically manned both in, you know, numerical aggregate numbers and just, you know, in specific critical NECs on board. And so it's a great benefit of being here, as well as, you know, the opportunity to go and visit different countries. You know, while we always want to, you know, have ships go out and do the mission at sea and have that presence, you know, arriving in different ports across the European theater is I think top of everybody's list. It's just going to experience, you know, that on a deployment. It's a game changer and really a great way of why you'd want to stay in, because you want to go and just see more, both on a deployment and then also when you're on leave, just the opportunity that, you know, being stationed in Spain offers to go out and see more of this great country, and as well as Central and Eastern Europe.
I know we were talking a little bit about like being aware of like your surroundings, especially like depending on your background, you sometimes just don't get that perspective that we were like off air talking about. Like, hey, I was like in the academy most of my entire life, and some of us were just in college, or some of us just went straight out of high school into the military, or like they worked a little bit. So just getting a different perspective on like our European allies is always a good idea as well. So hopefully they take some time to even travel, like if they have a little bit of that leave time built up. So hopefully they keep that one in mind too.
Yeah, and I always tell folks too, like time will pass you by quick, and you know, I'm asking new check-ins, you know, kind of what's your use or lose leave balance and why do you have that? You know, I want to ensure that, you know, we take opportunities, even if it's for longer weekends, to get out, get away from work, and go see and experience new things. Just typically a sailor's only here for, if you're on a ship, maybe 3 to 4 years, shore duty here, 2 years, maybe three with an extension. It goes by quickly, and all of a sudden when you're inside of a year left, you're wondering what you still have to go see and do and why you haven't done more.
That's exactly where we are right now. We're inside a year and wondering how we haven't had the chance to go see X, Y, and Z and trying to figure out how we get the next bits of travel all set up. So it does pass fast. So if you're out there, you think you got a lot of time, you're going to blink and you don't have a whole lot of time left as you're starting to think through timelines for PCSs and shipping the dog and all that kind of stuff. I would like to go back a little bit to the ships that we already have here. So we've been talking a lot about Oscar Austin, but we've got four other ships who are here, and I mean, they've been rowing hard for a while. I don't know if you can talk a little bit about what some of your ships are up to right now, the ones that were deployed.
Certainly. And just for context for everybody listening, typically a four deployed ship here in Rota that'll be stationed here comes out for 8 years, and they go through a cycle of what we call patrols, which is really synonymous with a deployment. And the rotation is they will go out for approximately 3 to 4 months. They'll come back to Rota for 3 to 4 months and do all the training and maintenance. But, you know, right now we've got two ships that are on deployment, the USS Arleigh Burke and the USS Bulkley. They're on patrol in the Eastern Med, and they've really been throughout the Mediterranean on their deployment. But, you know, focal point here, obviously, with what's happening in the world and in the Levant and, you know, activities that are happening between Iran and Israel. The Navy always has an eye to what's happening in the world, and the advantage of a naval force being that we can, you know, create the presence in close proximity to areas of interest. And so they certainly are, you know, awaiting tasking. USS Bulkley actually just conducted intercepts with Standard Missile 3s over a month ago on the defense of Israel, where Iran had that ballistic missile attack last month. They are on point and ready to go. The USS Cole also did. We have, you know, destroyers that will come in and out of the area that will take tactical control of while they're operating in Europe. And they're very fluent going from here in Europe and the Mediterranean down through the Suez. And obviously all that's happening in the Red Sea right now. A lot of kinetic operations going on there between, you know, the Houthis and attacking, you know, civilian shipping. And the Navy's playing a defense in that, you know. I think they're saying used to be a global force for good, and that's what we're seeing right now with our warfighters.
Very good. And, of course, the one last thing that I know we have on our list is talking about the CNO's plan. We have the NAV plan coming up. We want to talk a little bit about the elements, if we can.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you want to add on to that, or are we just throwing it straight to other sir over here?
So I think maybe before we get to the NAV plan, we should probably play a little bit more spooky music just to make sure that we keep the ambiance going.
You know, I really like that plan.
But with the NAV plan, I think we talked about it a little bit when it first came out on the radio show, I think, when I had Admiral Collins on board. But it is a great topic to keep reinforcing to really understand how we fit into the Navy's highest-ranking officer's plan for not only conducting operations now, but moving the Navy forward so that we're postured to be able to respond to potential future conflicts.
All right. And with that, we got one of your selected songs. We got some Vampire Weekend singing a bit about cousins. Going over a little bit of the planning, and we're going to have a little game coming up as well. So make sure you guys stick around. But first, sir, I know you wanted to touch up on the plan just a little bit.
Yeah, so the CNO's 2024 NAV plan came out, it was just about a month and a half ago, I believe. But it is her strategic guidance for America's warfighting Navy. And when she first assumed the office, she gave us three pillars upon which she was building her philosophy: warfighting, warfighters, and the foundation. And the navigation plan was more direct guidance in how we fulfill some of those core areas. And I know for us on the installation, it was very clear in the way that we get about taking care of our sailors, the way that we make sure that our facilities are taken care of, the way that we prioritize where we spend our money, because as with everybody, there's never enough money to handle all of the tasks in front of us. But for those who have the time, I recommend get in there, read the navigation plan. It's not that long. It seems like a little bit, but it's really not that much. And it really is the chance for you to hear directly from the CNO her thoughts on how we make sure the Navy's ready now and how we ensure that we are prepared in the future. But I think the most interesting part about the NAV plan to me is the way that it ties together the elements that we have here on the installation. So the foundation part, so WWF, Warfighters, Warfighting, and the foundation. The foundation part is very squarely in my lane. It's my job. It's the job of this team here to make sure that Naval Station Rota is ready to make sure that the warfighting units are able to deploy on time, every time, with the resources they need to execute their mission. But for warfighting, I'll hand it over to the Commodore.
Exactly. And just back to my point on what we do as a destroyer squadron with these warships, is readiness. And it's always should be viewed in the lens of, you know, what does this do for our readiness to, if needed, conduct prompt and sustained combat operations? And it's looked at of, hey, are we going to accept, you know, degradations to systems that provide just that? Or do we just go and accept it and hope it all works out? And then this really gives some guidance on making sure we are ready for all our systems, our subsystems, and our people are included in this with our sailors, their family readiness, their individual readiness, and looking at from the lens of, hey, if we need to sail you in harm's way, are all aspects of this ready to go?
And then with the warfighters themselves, as you said, the sailors themselves are part of these warfighting systems. And the warfighters, it is where all of these seams blend. So I have some responsibility here to make sure they have the chance to go work out, to get some good food, to lay their head down and rest, to feel safe and secure every time they're on the installation. And then the training to be able to execute the warfighting, it belongs to the different CTF commanders that we have here, the operational commanders, whether it's on the helicopters, the ships with the expeditionary forces. If any one of us is not doing our job well enough, we're not making sure that the sailors are prepared to execute their mission. Because, I mean, you know better than I do, Commodore, that when something pointy-nosed is coming at you, you have to be able to focus on that problem and exclusively on that problem. And the training that happens on those ships is just the last step in making sure they're ready. It's everything from their personal readiness all the way up to that training readiness that makes sure that they are able to execute that mission. And I think we do it exceptionally here. I think that the way that we work together, the training that we have, the opportunities that we have, it's unique here in Rota, and it just makes us a much stronger warfighting force.
And I bet we can even see that too. Like, we should probably get some more junior sailors in here to come and talk with you so that we get a lot more of that perspective, them saying, hey, yes, we are getting all of this and then some, and then we could pull some more individuals from the ship to come in here, also give a little bit of that discussion as well, telling us like, hey, this is what we've been seeing and the changes that we've been liking.
Yeah, and Skipper and I rely on our sailors' feedback and really kind of getting ground truth at the deck plates, because while at our level, sometimes it looks like we want to, you know, check our six here and make sure that that's accurate. And, you know, yep, our sailors and our teams will provide that. And that way we can elevate challenges so we can have all three of the, you know, elements of WWF, you know, go into the bigger mission.
And that's a great point. I halfway joke, wherever I go, I'm surrounded in a bubble of rainbows and unicorns. Like, everything's going well here. You know, you do a good job of supporting this or whatever. It's really difficult to get honest feedback on ways that we can improve the support that we provide when it's just me talking to a sailor. But I do want to plug one thing real quick if I can. So we have, we've just turned on, we hit the switch on a virtual triad suggestion box. So pulling ourselves out of the 20th century with those CO suggestion boxes that we have around the installation where you can sign something on a piece of paper and put it in there. And this will give everybody the chance to either go on to one of our SharePoint sites where there's a link to it, or we're going to have QR codes that we have posted around where you can just snap that QR code, give me some feedback. It goes directly to me, the CMC and the XO, and gives us a chance to chew on some of that input. So I think we do a great job here, but I know that there are ways that we can do it better. And this is one chance for our sailors to provide some of that feedback. Some of our civilians, the folks who are here, provide that continuity. Some of our local nationals who understand the relationship between the United States and Spain and the support that they provide, the unique support that they provide, to let us know how we can do it better.
Yeah, so, and the quick time that it allows, just I don't have to go write on a piece of paper and drop in a box. Now I can do it at the location where it's happening.
Right.
That'll probably make things a lot smoother.
I do request, if you provide something like that, give me your idea for how I make it better. Give me something to work with, and I will happily start pursuing that.
All right. Is there anything else either one of you wanted to add to the conversation before we switched up to trivia?
I'm going to keep delaying while I can because I know I'm going to lose this trivia fight. So what else can we talk about?
Not much now. It's too late.
Yeah.
We're going to be switching it up to a little bit of Halloween trivia. All right. So for our first question brought to you by PAO, we're going to start with an easy one.
Oh, no.
Of which country did Halloween originate?
Ooh.
I'm going to give you guys a couple hints. One, it's in Europe. Two, I'm of that nationality.
That's not fair.
Well, St. Brown does not help me. Let's see.
Yeah. I have no idea. How is this an easy one?
All right, I'm going to give some multiple choices. It is A, the United States, B, Ireland, C, England, or D, Scotland.
I'm going to say Ireland.
You are correct,
okay,
sir.
Good.
We'll mark you down for 1 point, but don't worry. We still
Hold
have some more questions, yeah. Commodore. This is your chance to come back.
If that was an easy one, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
Oh, no, that was
gonna be
probably one of the harder ones. You know, make it seem like it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but
very
we're going to switch it up.
Awkward conversation for the next couple of minutes.
All right, let it rip.
We got, according to folklore, which animal is considered a symbol of bad luck on Halloween?
Usually a black cat crossing your path is bad luck, so I'll just say a black cat.
You are correct, sir. You nailed it right on the head without any of the hints.
And with that, it's been great being here. Thank you.
Oh, no, don't worry. We still have a few more that I was able to scrounge together yesterday. And, of course, I had the wife help out a little bit. But what was the original name of Halloween?
All Hallows Eve?
That is correct, right, sir. Yeah, I got a little bit of a change just to be commercialized and switched up yeah. Back when it was a little bit more along the magical folklore stuff.
Yeah, yes.
Now, what is the U.S. witchcraft capital?
Witchcraft
capital.
Is it Salem, Massachusetts?
That is correct,
yes,
sir. See, easy ones, easy ones. Now I'm going to throw a little bit of a challenge at you guys.
All right.
What did the Europeans use as an alternative to the pumpkin? It is a root-based plant.
Root-based plant.
Mm-hmm.
Europeans.
Yes.
So, rigid in Ireland, so I want to say root-based would be potatoes, but I don't know that that is quite so fully European.
We had a bit of a potato famine back then.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a hint. It starts with the letter T.
No
tomatoes?
Idea.
Nope.
No. That would be messy.
The answer is turnips.
Turnips?
Believe it or not, they would carve turnips because they were more widely available.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, the potatoes, unfortunately, were made for eating and sometimes distilling.
I guess depending on which part of Europe, yeah. That's
all right, we'll switch up to some easier
Lots
ones
of uses
now.
There, yes.
What do you call a man who practices witchcraft?
Is that a warlock?
It is a warlock. My second favorite class in World of Warcraft. Anyway. And for our final question, this one is worth 2 points because it is a bit of a challenge, but it's pop culture referency. So what was, on average, the most watched movie during the Halloween season?
Most watched movie? Is it Halloween?
It is Halloween.
Oh.
Who would have thought? For the namesake.
For the win.
For the win.
Nice work.
All right. And that should do it, sir. Congratulations. Our ICO has won it again.
Yeah, we never tipped the scales in my favor. I really appreciate all the help that
the team
around me gave me, especially the notes that PAO was passing me as we were struggling.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots of turnips there to decorate and carve in housing. So.
Yeah, there was actually a time that I would actually, back when I was still in the States, I would hand out potatoes and turnips instead. And I still offered candy as well, but for whatever reason, all the kids took the potatoes and turnips. Probably, I don't know, they're trying to grow a farm or something.
They were waiting for you to go to bed, that's all. So they
didn't. Maybe they had hopes and dreams, and the potato was the hope and dream. All right. Is there anything else either we want to add before we start heading back to the music, closing out the top of the hour?
Well, Skipper, Pastor Brown, thanks for having me today. It's great to share some Morning Joe with you guys here, and really excited for the year ahead for the ships here on this great installation and all that they're doing, and their families are excited to be here, especially the new folks here from USS Oscar Austin. So just thank you always for your hospitality, and look forward to all that's to come.
Yeah, and Commodore, thanks for joining us today. It's always fun for me to have the chance to talk to somebody else who's as passionate about their job as I am, and someone who's such a great partner in everything that we're trying to accomplish here in Rota. And thanks to everybody who helped with Oscar Austin's arrival and who support everybody who was down on the waterfront. I mean, of course, you know, without FDRMC's support, we wouldn't be able to get the ships out and into the fight. There's very few, if anybody, who is as good at ensuring that our ships are ready to fight as FDRMC here in Rota. To AIMD, I don't think we talk enough about them. So the intermediate maintenance department that we have supporting aviation here, without their support, HSM 79, who is a huge warfighting enabler, wouldn't be able to deploy with our ships here and go out and support the missions that they do. And of course, you know, near and dear to my heart, MH-60 Romeos out there who provide some over-the-horizon looks, who do anti-submarine warfare, who do ESM, who are just this little flying ball of intel collection that support the ships while they're out there. It's all of that stuff. Every ship that deploys really, really kind of embodies the way that the Navy fights in all domains at all times when they are deployed. And it's really impressive, and it's I've told people I don't miss flying. My body is happy being done flying, but I do miss being out at sea. I miss being part of a ship that is out there executing their mission, feeling everything roll underneath you, and knowing that just around the corner is the chance to practice your craft. I think it is. I think it's really, really cool.
And just give a little bit of a shout out to all the families that are standing by, the sailors, all of our enlisted and our officers. Thank you so Absolutely. Much. And definitely remember to be safe for this Halloween. Again, it's a little bit wet outside, so keep an eye on the kids. Stay safe. And we're going to end the show with a little bit of Metallica, of course, because it is The Unforgiven. So what better way to round everything out? Thank both of you for coming in. Thank you, PAO, for helping and maybe cheating a little bit. Other than that, let's get back to the music.